Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, I guess this is, what's the date here?
I think it's the 10th.
The 10th of January, headed toward Friday the 13th.
Oh, boy.
And earnings season and a bunch of other things going on in the stock market that are worth talking about. Overall, what happened in the last week? Not much.
Well, I mean, there was a flat. Actually, Monday was great. Or Tuesday. Tuesday, when we got back from the break, it was great and then went sideways. And there was not much going on. There was kind of like a, I guess you would call it, investors were absorbing what happened and what's happening and getting ready for earnings season. And then we did see the euro puke went down to about 126 or so.
Yay.
Yeah, and then popped back up, went to 128 and change. And, you know, all this action happens at about between 2 and 5 in the morning Eastern.
Huh.
And this is when the markets open in Europe and, you know, when people are selling out over there. I guess they wake up over there and say, oh, let's buy the euro. Let's buy the stock futures. And particularly at about 201, 131, and 3 o'clock is when things start moving, exactly at those times.
Really?
Yep.
Well, it's a world market nowadays, and I guess 20 – might as well just keep the New York open 24/7. Why not? It's all done by computers. I don't see the reason of closing it. What's the reason for ringing a bell?
I have no idea. I mean, the futures market closed for 15 minutes a day. 15 minutes, that's it.
Why?
From 4:15 to 4:30. I guess they have to – I don't know. I guess they have to reset.
Reason.
They must have to reset their computers to the next day and roll it in and give people a break, smoking break.
That doesn't sound right.
Coffee?
Reset the computer.
I don't know. 15 minutes. Maybe it's just tradition.
Well, these traditions die hard. I think they should give up on these ideas. Keep everything open 24/7 and let it go.
Right. Just, you know, have like a – and maybe even have a kiosk at every Walmart for the stock market.
Why not?
Yep. That would be a good idea.
Have
nobody
a, have
ever
a guy in, this, in the kiosk buying and selling.
Yeah. Walmart blue light special at the stock kiosk. Nice. Well, it's Kmart maybe it was. Anyway, earnings season is upon us, and the official kickoff to earnings season is Alcoa. And that is the quote-unquote official. There is also some other companies that report before that. But generally speaking, the big companies, the blue chips, they started off Alcoa. Alcoa comes out with a 3-cent loss, which is a little bit worse than anticipated. Hmm. And they had a little bit better revenue than expected. Now, mind you, earnings and revenue expectations have been coming down by analysts for the last, I'll say, several weeks, maybe not a couple of months. And so, you know, beating is... Well, it's good, but again, you have to look at what was the move before that on the stock. What was the earnings expectations a few months ago? I mean, Alcoa looks terrible. The stock looks terrible, but it has run up pretty well over the last several weeks into earnings season. So when the earnings came out, of course, it popped up really nicely, about 3-4% after hours, and does what Alcoa does best: ends the next day flat. And if the trend continues of what has happened in the past, what's going to happen is that Alcoa will slowly start moving lower over the next, I don't know, however many weeks until the next time earnings come out and investors get excited about it and then bid the stock up again and then get disappointed.
It sounds like a cycle somebody could play.
Yeah, it is. You know, it happens regularly. There's a couple of things, I guess, that are probably what is behind it. You have... a lot of shorts that want to square up before earnings comes out. You have a lot of longs that are saying, hey, this time it's going to be different. You have people expecting that there's going to be something that is changing. Management was a little bit more optimistic this time around than they had been in the past, but still, that's not saying much. A lot of smelters are being closed down around the world because of low output and low requirements for you know, aluminum and a variety of other metals. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of a crazy time. You know, you see some areas and some sectors, some companies doing really well.
I thought the Chinese would keep this market propped up.
Well, the Chinese market is in bad shape. Have you looked at what's going on over there?
Well, what?
Well, their exports came out last night or Monday night. Yeah, Monday night. And it was the lowest in years.
Hmm.
And that actually sparked a worldwide rally. Now, you may say to me, why is that?
Why is that?
Yeah, I thought you would ask that.
That's the way I do it with more drama.
Yeah, the reason for that is, it seems, at least from what is being said, is that it's a comment on the idea that, well, if the economy is slowing down faster than was anticipated, if in fact Europe is having a much greater effect on the exports of China and the worldwide growth situation, well, China will be coming down and will be softening and won't just fall off a cliff. It'll be a nice slow move lower, and that means we're not going to have a hard landing or just, you know, a flop. In addition to that, it is signaling, with quotes around that, that stimulus, or at least the change of government's tightening measures, will be enacted. Huh. So it's funny because when you read articles and you take a look at the news items, almost every time there is – we've talked about this – almost every time there's a slowdown discussion that something isn't looking good, they end the discussion with, and that's ever more reason why either stimulus or tightening measures will be changed. And it's this whole world is living on the idea that stimulus is out there and it's going to continue and government's going to provide. And you know, unfortunately, they're not allowing businesses or markets to operate in a free and clear environment so we could really see what's going on.
Hmm.
But that's what it is.
Sounds like a rationalization to me.
Yeah, it is a rationalization. Totally. But, you know, anything that you have in the world is worth what somebody will pay. So whether or not Alcoa is worth $9 or $10, it all depends on, okay, what's the future outlook? What's the anticipation? What may be coming? What may not be coming? And, of course, stocks have a way of looking out further ahead. You know, usually they're a six-month barometer. And economics in the U.S. have been a bit brighter compared to where they at least were last summer and maybe even through, we'll say, May when – just all over the place, everybody was predicting a recession, and it didn't come to fruition. I can't tell you how many times all these predictions don't come to fruition. So now we have to ask ourselves, is the prediction that we're not going to go into a recession not going to come to fruition? You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're just going to be wrong about everything.
Yeah, it's just it's unbelievable. Analysts are too low, they're too high. I mean, they're just way out of, off the mark across the board. It's really quite amazing. Just shows you how confusing of an environment it is because of the government interference.
Yeah, well, that's what your theory was since we began doing this show, actually.
Yeah, it creates good and bad, but it creates a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you a lot of people are confused. As a matter of fact, the next point that I brought up on our little cheat sheet here is that, you know, you look at the recent rallies, the recent drops. Well, if you look at hedge funds back to 2011, that the hedge fund bullishness, which is a measurement that they look at how much is owned on the long side for hedge funds, there was an increase from the last week or so to 44. This is the bullishness ratio from 43.9. This is close to the lowest it's been since 2009. Hmm. So this is the lowest that hedge funds have been in terms of equity exposure since 2008. And they've been cutting their bets since February of 2011 when it was about 55. So, you know, this is quote unquote the smart money, they say, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all the smart money is pulling out of the market. So I don't know what that says. Is the smart money dumb money, or is the smart money in the end really the smart money?
Well, I would guess they're the smart money. Smart money, smart money. That's my motto.
Yeah. I mean, this has happened over and over again where you see a report that comes out that something like hedge funds are betting on copper to be, you know, extending their gains by raising their bullishness bets on copper futures or something like that. And then all you'd find out is, you know, within the next 3 or 4 weeks, copper drops off a cliff. Or you see the reverse. You know, hedge funds are raising their oil bets and then, you know, or dropping their oil bets. And the reverse happens. It's almost like there's a strange... It's almost like there's a strange hand at work underlying all this that's trying to just screw the hedge funds.
Well, or just the opposite.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, if you want to get out, you tell people to get in.
Right.
You got a lot of hedge funds carry a lot of, you know, they're not buying penny stocks. And they, but they have, well, it's almost as if they are buying penny stocks is what I'm trying to say, I think, which is because they have so much money that they can actually make the stock move.
Right. and they can move the markets with futures and leveraging it up.
Yeah, so they if they wanted to get out, they don't want to just get out. They want to create a false kind of a mini bull market for the stock to keep it propped up. So as they get out, it's not falling through the floor, and they can
right.
You know, don't you think? I mean, isn't that what you?
I mean, yeah, it definitely can be. I mean, you know, there has been an unbelievable run on certain stocks, but what you find is, for example, we had a few stocks. The last couple of weeks have been kind of just you know only the big caps are moving. The Dow like stocks, you know, Microsoft, and I'll talk about that in a minute, has been moving. Just the big names, the solid, maybe the dividend performers, and then what you've also found is there's a big short squeeze going on here and there. You see stocks that are just in the toilet that have been just, you know, have a high short interest ratio. And all of a sudden, either a news item comes out or the stock starts moving and it bolts higher. And it's the skittishness of investors, whether it's on the short or long side. I mean, we had a stock today. There was just some comments about maybe, you know, the potential of what's happening inside of a conference. Not all the notes were released. And the stock is up 22%. And, you know, you see on the other hand, you see Tiffany's, well, they come out, you know, things aren't as good as we thought, and they drop 10%. Crocs comes out after the close tonight and says, you know, we think that our revenues are going to be a little bit potentially better. In other words, they pushed the high end just slightly, but they kept the range below the low end. So they thought it would be maybe, I don't know, it was $1 million more in revenue or something like that. Stock's up 7% after hours.
Huh.
It just, you know, it's this crazy movement. Of what's going on, because it's very low liquidity, low expectations, wall of worry. So anything that's happening contra to the, you know, the common theme is moving it and the short squeezing.
I don't know. I don't know how you can even do this job.
Really? It's like juggling a bit, isn't it? With razor blades.
It's a nightmare.
It has gotten a lot more difficult, I will tell you. A lot more difficult. A lot more moving parts. So, but let's talk about some of the things that you do in your world. Let's talk about Microsoft. Microsoft is the Windows 8 is being, the mobile versions and all that's being taken on pretty well. People like it. Meanwhile, they're making some nice announcements at CES. But they come out after the close today. Do you see this little ditty?
No.
They said that...
PC sales are down.
Much worse than expected.
That's what everybody's been saying. Why are they bringing it? They're a little late to the ball game on saying PC sales would be down. Dell said it. Intel said it. This is like a while back.
Yep.
And now they're coming on board with it. Come on.
Yeah. Well, they're blaming it, of course.
Oh, please, on the flooding in Thailand.
Yeah. Now I don't get that. I can understand some things, like I don't know, you know, Seagate. Which, by the way, if you think about what happened with Seagate, it's pretty good for Seagate because they were able to increase their pricing and still push product because of the lack of product that was available. So they really, if you look at that stock, it really jumped. But I don't understand how the flooding in Thailand, which, you know, shuts down PC sales. I don't get it. Can you explain that to me?
I know, because there is no connection, except unless you're going to count the fact that hard disks are going to cost a few bucks more, and then that'll slow down the sales. I don't think so.
It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense. Because, you know, it's one thing if you say that, well, they have a margin squeeze because of that or something of that nature, but at the same time, the sales cycle, if they can't get it, I don't know. It's bogus if you want me to comment on it. But if you look at the chart I sent you, see Microsoft lately has been skyrocketing.
Well, if you want to call it that, I guess 24 to 27 is skyrocketing by the standards of Microsoft.
Oh, that's enormous. That's like a 600% move for anybody else.
I know they're at CES and they're showing off their Windows 8 this and Windows 8 that, and they talk about it to an extreme. And I did get a couple of Nokia phone 7.5 Windows phone devices, and I like it.
I don't like the tiling.
I don't like the tiling. I think there's other things that it could be better. But it has a lot of – for people that don't – you know, that aren't nerds that want to get into a smartphone but they don't want to just spend all their time dealing with apps.
Right.
I think it's a pretty functional product. It has a lot of nice features like the You know how, like an Android phone, you want a barcode reader. You have to buy one for regular barcodes and another one for the funky looking thing. I forgot what they're called.
Yeah, the square barcode.
The square barcode. And also then you have another little app to take a picture of some text and then translate it. Mm-hmm. This is all one app. And you just take the picture and it says, whoa, that's interesting. This is a barcode. This is that kind of a barcode. This or this is text. And we'll you want to translate it? It's actually quite efficient.
Well, that's good. And you could use Word on it, although it's a small screen.
Yeah, you could use Word on it if you wanted to. They also have the navigation is there. I like the navigation. They can get a sexy British female voice to give you the navigational directions.
Mm. Yeah. I have on mine, embedded in my life, is a Jewish Floridian wife that gives me direction. Have you ever heard that one?
I've always advocated people get these, and I like the idea of some carping old lady.
Yeah, yeah.
You're gone too far. Turn around. What are you doing?
Right, and if all else fails, why don't you ask somebody already? No, can't do that. I'm not asking anybody. Listen, I've traveled pretty well around the world, and my wife always says to me, you know, we're a little bit, you know, we're lost. Why don't you ask somebody? So I can't stand anymore. I say, okay, fine, I'm going to ask somebody. You know what? They could be living there for their entire life and generations before them, and they never know where anything is. How is that possible?
I ask people all the time. I think it's a myth that guys don't – I mean, some people don't like to ask people. My wife won't ask anybody anything. But I ask people all the time, but I always go to a place where I have to try to judge what do I think, who might know.
Okay, so where do you go? Like you
I go to a lot of gas stations, but right. Even at gas stations, if it's more than two or three blocks away, they don't know what you're talking about.
If it's not within eyesight, you're
it's good for telling you to make sure you're not going in the wrong direction.
Right,
they can
right.
usually get that, but right. yeah, no. If it gets too complicated, they go, I've never heard of it, and it's like you've been living here, right? Yeah, I've been here all my life, never heard of it, and it's like some huge thing.
Right next door.
Yeah, so there is that element, and that's all over the world.
Right.
And people ask me for directions all the time, every so often. I see a couple of German tourists with a map or something, and they come over and ask me for how do I get to Howard Street? And I just point them in some direction and tell them to go five blocks that way and take a right,
whether it's that way or not.
Yeah.
Nice, very nice.
That's good. It gives them
German
a little tour of the area.
Right. Gosh. Well, let's see. So that's happening with Microsoft, and there has been some pre-announcements in the area of other technology. We talked about Acme Packet, and there's been kind of a murmur around that there's some problem with sales around the world. But at the same time, investors don't really seem to care too much because they're picking up the pieces of many of these stocks a day or two later. You see these stocks drop, whatever it may be, and they drop hard, and then they just get picked up, and it's this is the kind of cycle that's going on right now. There's this push and this pull that there's a lot of bullishness out there and there's a lot of bearishness out there, optimism, pessimism. And, at the same time, we've always talked about how economies can become disjointed. But yet, right now, if China is in fact going to be supposedly laying off some of their tightening, then the world would be in a little bit happier. Now, with that in mind, just tonight, there was a news item from the official news source and the official central bank of China saying that they still need about one or two more years to keep the curbs in place to stabilize the housing market before they go and do something, anything more significant on a long-term basis. So, this interesting correlation between, the hope for stimulus and the fact that the government keeps saying, well, that's not going to happen. Is, I guess they're fighting the Fed over there. But the market was due for a bounce. The market was in bad shape over there. The Shenzhen, Shanghai, Hong Kong's a little bit different. So let me tell you something. At the same time, we talk about, how things are getting a little bit crazy over in China. But meanwhile, I don't know if you're in the market for a car, but Ford is saying, of course, that for the second time in this discussion, that the Thailand floods are hurting sales and preventing several Asian units from making profits. But at the same time, Rolls-Royce and Porsche are selling at just an absolute crazy pace. Porsche having one of the biggest backlogs they've ever had. The Lamborghini Aventador, they call it, $355,000 for this car.
Yeah.
You have to wait a year to get the car.
Yeah, that's keeping me from getting one.
See? I knew it. Right? Now, Rolls-Royce is the deliveries they had for 2011 for the whole year is seemingly going to set a pace that is 30 years old in terms of a record of car deliveries and primarily on China orders. So they can't be hurting too much in China because of all this.
No. No. And that Rolls is really one of the most unattractive vehicles out there.
I don't know why. I've just never really ridden in one. Have you been inside one of these?
The new one? I've been in Rolls Royces numerous times, but I haven't been in one since these new ones, the ones that are made by Volkswagen? Or no, the BMW.
Now,
I haven't been inside or driven around a BMW Rolls Royce, no.
The old ones that you were in, were they comfortable?
It's a great car.
Worth the money?
I don't know about that, but it's a great car. I like the one I like, the current modern car, and a friend of mine has one. I've been in it a number of times, is that Bentley Continental. Mm. That's a gem.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing looks good. No, it's not cheap. It looks good, and it's really comfortable. It's got a great – it's just a fantastic vehicle. That's what I'd get if I had some money.
Right. Well, we will – I think it's interesting that these cars are large cars, gas guzzlers. They're not efficient on fuel at all, right?
Nope.
Not at all.
No, Bentley's like 450 horsepower or something.
Well, there you go. So anybody that's looking for one of these, I should think you should get your orders in quickly before they are sold out for the year.
Yeah, and these are all, to me, these are these car things like what you're describing are contrary indicators. They always do this kind of thing. Always happens before a crash.
Ah, now I have something about it. Let's see here. I'm looking down here. Look down. I mean,
what kind of douchebags are buying these cars right now at this point in the way the economy's going?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're doing
seriously. Who wants to buy something? What's the point?
Yeah.
I want to enjoy myself.
Yeah. Well, I made it through the worst of times financially, and I survived, and I deserve now to pamper myself. How about that for a thesis?
That's part of it, but it just seems to me to be gloating.
Yeah. Now you talk about this.
It's unattractive.
Negative correlation. Look down the list a little bit. This is seemingly this about the curse of naming a sports arena after a company.
I don't know anything about the curse.
Well, it seems that when you name a football arena after yourself, it takes only a number of years before you go belly up. Seriously, there's all sorts of hope
because AT&T Park is where the Giants play, and that would be fun.
Well, there seems to be that there really is. If you look at that and look that up, anybody out there should look this up. You could look at all the different times.
Oracle Arena,
Enron named a few things. I mean, you just go on and on with this. But there seems to be also this. Somebody did a story on this: the unhealthy correlation between the building of skyscrapers and subsequent financial crashes, which is what you're saying about the cars.
Mm-hmm.
So they say seemingly there was this. The Empire State Building was built, and the Great Depression was just occurring, and all that. The current world's tallest building in Dubai was built just before they pretty much went bust. China is building the biggest builder of skyscrapers. India has 14 skyscrapers under construction, and they say that often the world's tallest buildings are simply the edifice of a broader skyscraper building boom, reflecting a widespread misallocation of capital and an impending economic correction. This is from Barclays.
Hmm.
So that goes along with your car thesis.
Yeah, kind of.
So they're building. So all these builders driving around in their Rolls and their Lamborghinis that are building these gigantic buildings are just setting themselves up for just disaster.
Yeah, unless they're running a casino in Macau.
Right. Which has those companies haven't been doing well either lately, which we're going to talk about as one of my stock picks.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, on to a little lighter topic. I was wondering, would you pay to go see a Broadway show, a one-man show? You like one-person shows?
I've seen a couple that were acceptable. It's a very hard thing to pull off, but it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, the latest is going to be William Shatner.
Ah, I'd probably pay to see this.
Now,
is he going to sing? I hope he sings. Well,
he is being portrayed as an actor, singer, and writer. The singer part, I've heard his singing. It's not so good. It really is not so good, okay? He's going to be in a two-hour, one-man show called Shatner's World. We Just Live in It. And it's a two-hour show. I'm trying to figure out where the interest is in this, but it's a two-hour show that will take audiences on a voyage, you know, with the whole Star Trek thing, through Shatner's life and career, from Shakespearean stage actor to internationally known icon and raconteur. What is that?
Well, after you said it a million times, I can't say it now, but raconteur.
Yeah. So, you know, we're going to basically be seeing him tell us all about his life.
It's basically a two-hour speech.
Yeah. It's got, after the first hour of the way that he enunciates words, it's got to be just misery. You know?
No, it might be okay. I'd go see it.
You would go see it.
I'm a big Shatner fan.
All right.
I like cornball actors, and I think he's one of the best.
Oh, he's a cornball actor. I mean, but it's going to be interesting. It's over at the Music Box Theater, so all of you that are looking to
get
your
tickets. The Music Box in New York?
Yep, in New York, Music Box Theater. It's going to be previewing on February 14th.
What was at the Music Box? I was just there, as a matter of fact. I'm trying to think what play I saw.
That's kind of up on the side street there, isn't it?
It's on, I think, 44th or 42nd, maybe.
It's not a big theater, if I'm not mistaken.
No, not very few of them are big.
Right. So what else are you hearing about CES? You mentioned about the Microsoft. You mentioned about Nokia. There's something about, Intel is being all hyped up with some of their chips and phone this, phone that, gadgetry this, gadgetry. What else? Anything else exciting?
Well, the 55-inch OLED screen is the one that everyone wants to go see. That'll be the most popular thing at the show. Both Samsung and LG will have one. So, I think Samsung came in late with theirs. And that should be interesting because it's only like 4 millimeters thick. It's almost like a piece of paper.
Wow.
And
so you can like paste it to a wall.
You could lift it. It's only 10, 15 pounds or something like that max.
Really?
It's like a 10 pound. Wow. It's like a bowling ball. It weighs what a bowling ball weighs. Hmm. And so that should be pretty – that'll be the hot ticket. And then there's a lot of – obviously these Ultrabooks from the Intel Ultrabook will be all over the place. And a lot of 3D, new 3Ds using circular polarization. I guess they've got that figured out so they can do that. And not a lot. A lot of little miscellaneous junky things here and there. But those, I think TV is the big thing again, which is what should be. It's a consumer electronics show. It's not right. The computer show. You know, people are always disappointed that it's not more computer stuff or Apple's not there enough. It's not really a show for them.
Right. Well, I think one of the things that I saw in the news was this exciting motorized shoes. It's a pair of shoes that has wheels on it. It's developed by this company called Action Inc. to help people kind of get to places further. It has these big red wheels on the back of it. And it's the funniest thing is this is, you know, alternative to a car or whatever. The guy that developed his name is Peter Treadway. How does he get the name so correlated with what the I don't understand that. But anyway, he says the idea was conceived after they had trouble finding a parking in Los Angeles. And
these are roller skates.
Yeah, they're roller skates
with motors.
With
motors. You'll kill yourself on these things.
What happened? Isn't that what happened to the inventor or the owner of the Segway? He went over a cliff.
No, it wasn't. No, that wasn't the inventor. It was, I don't think. It was some guy who was a big Segway. He was either an investor or some guy was promoting it or something. I forgot who did that, but it was. Let me take a look. Segway.
I thought maybe it was the guy that bought the company.
That's a possibility. Something like
went over a cliff.
It was some irony in there, I realize.
Yeah.
Segway tycoon Jimmy, spelled the same way as the musician, Jimmy Heseldon, dies in cliff plunge on one of his own Segways. It was in September of 2010. Found dead in a river after plunging 80 feet over a limestone cliff. He was He was riding a rugged country version of the Segway.
Yeah. So if he was on the city version, he would have been in the rocks and over the area, that area. Probably be on the street itself.
Yeah, so
I don't think these motorized shoes have that kind of danger involved with them, do you?
They would with me. I'm, you know, I can't skate.
Well, that's a, yeah, that's a good point. You have to, I guess you'd have to have balance to skate and to stay up on. This guy's like schlepping up and down CES with these things.
Yeah.
Riding really? All over the place. Yeah. Yeah. So some video that I gave you on
there
that.
There used to be a lot of segues at CES, but it's so crowded. You'd have, half the time you're stopped because you can't get through. You can worm your way through when you're walking because you can turn yourself sideways and you can push somebody, but you can't do that on the Segway. It's useless.
Right. The other thing about that we're hearing is that Google is having some difficulty. You know, Google purchased Motorola Mobility, right, some time ago. And they're making, you know, the big Android phone maker, et cetera. But they're saying that they expect a significant slowdown in the releasing of new models. It looks that they have concentrated in the marketing into a few models. But there's going to be, I guess they're hinting that some of the sales in this area are going to be slowing down. Because, I mean, there was the activation of Google devices and smartphones based on Android were really, I mean, just on fire for a while there.
Yeah.
But it seems there's going to be some slowing going on.
Well, and you know, this I think we've gotten getting close to market penetration of the smartphone. I mean, not everybody wants one. My wife just put the whole family on a plan. I guess it was a Verizon plan. And she went out of her way not to get a smartphone. She hates them. She has a phone with a dial on it. You know,
really?
No, not a rotary dial, but it's you know, it's got the old buttons. It's just the normal, you know, the normal push buttons. It doesn't have a keyboard,
right? And, but she likes it. She's fine. She's using a phone for a phone and a computer for a computer.
Yeah, she doesn't. She has no desire to go into a deal with the smartphone. The funny thing is, I think she'd love it, but she's adamant.
Listen, some companies have actually gone so far as to manually turning off the service for BlackBerries and for other email over the weekends because they feel that their employees are just getting overwhelmed with work on a constant basis. So, and that's the world we live in. It's become, you know, the technology was supposed to be so helpful and, you know, ease the daily living and work activities, but it's become kind of overwhelming for some people, right?
Yeah. I think that it's a time killer.
Yeah, I mean, and then it not only is it a time killer though, but it doesn't give you any kind of, you know, ability to relax. You know, the stuff is coming in constantly. Not to mention the spam. But anyway, so what do you think about what's going on with the political environment? You've been following all this. I know you're a big C-SPAN watcher.
Yeah.
So what do you think about all of the Republican debates? And I mean, anybody making any headway in your opinion in terms of
People are finally getting a clue that that people are interested in Ron Paul. At least the media is finally getting a clue. So, you know, so you have a lot of, you get more Ron Paul coverage, which is nice because he has a nice message. I don't think I still, you know, he came in second in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And which was good. And it'd be interesting to see what happens in South Carolina, because I think the message, you know, he's basically an old-fashioned, like George McGovern, kind of like Obama was, anti-war, you know, anti-inflation, anti-big government, anti-Patriot Act, which Obama never was. But, you know, he's just a classic libertarian.
Back to the way things were.
Well, it's not back to the way things were, because you're never going to get back to the way things were. But you're at least don't have to keep making it worse.
Now, I don't mean to be picking on something that is totally and to an extent ridiculous. But, you know, is there some belief, do you think, that a president should look presidential? Seriously.
And you don't think Ron Paul looks presidential?
I have no problem if he just gets a suit that fits.
Yeah, the ill-fitting suit could be yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea.
I mean, just around the collar where it sticks up and out.
It's not like it's a JCPenney suit, but it's more like a JCPenney suit from the 60s.
Right. Right, exactly. I just, you know, what happened, it was way back when presidential debates were first televised, and there was one of the biggest issues was there was a one of the, I think it was in the Nixon, what was the makeup issue? Remember that?
No, Nixon sweated.
Right. So
they used to have to pat him down during commercial breaks, you know, essentially towel him off. And then they made him carry a handkerchief that was soaked in antiperspirant. And he would have to keep – he'd always pull the handkerchief out and he'd have to dab it around his face to suck up the – and, you know, to clog his pores and suck up the sweat. He was a guy who sweated a lot. It was a problem.
Right, and for TV, that was – all of a sudden you saw what was really going on. I mean, the same thing here. You need to have a look.
Yeah, I would say Ron Paul needs some fashion advice. But he's 76. I mean, he dresses kind of the part.
All I'm saying is just get a suit that fits. That's all I'm saying. I'm not asking for – I don't care what he's wearing. He could be wearing shorts right now. I don't care. Just, you know, when he's up there, it looks like it's just this baggy old suit that, you know, it just – he looks famished.
Famished.
You know?
Yeah.
This looks like he's out of his, you know, that this is – you know, he has one suit or something that – which I know is not the case. Or at least I think is not the case.
Well, maybe he only has one suit. Maybe he doesn't like wearing suits.
Well, that's obvious. You know, that's obvious. That's very obvious. So it seems that, you know, Michelle Bachmann is out since the last time we talked.
Yeah.
Or at least she's – what'd she say?
Hiatus. Yeah, because if she does it that way, then she can still get her matching funds.
Yeah. And at the same time, it seems that this new campaign rule, which says that basically there's an unlimited amount of money that can be given to campaigns – is kicking in nicely. Sheldon Adelson now gave $5 million to the Gingrich campaign. And, you know, this was a Supreme Court ruling some time ago that said, you know, and this is the first time it's really being acted upon, that, you know, is going to allow wealthy individuals to influence an election. I mean, it's kind of strange that.
Yeah, I mean, you can see this is influencing the election. I mean, Gingrich will be president if it keeps going on like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think so.
It's crazy. I mean, I don't understand how they allowed such a thing to happen, that you could just be giving unlimited amounts of money to a campaign.
I can see that it's never going to stop happening. And I always tell people this. Who benefits from all this money? What kind of segment of the society, you know, somebody gets a bunch of campaign money. Who, in the end, who ends up with this money?
The
big media companies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And what are they going to do? What do you think they're going to – how far do you think campaign finance reform will go once the big media company Bean Counters goes, hey, wait a minute. This is no good.
Right.
We should cut – we should go just the opposite direction. We're making a fortune during this. I mean, they make all their money. It's like the Christmas season for big media, TV stations, radio, newspapers. You know, and they're the guys who are the influence peddlers, so they're not going to peddle this. I mean, they like it the way it is. They like it worse. I mean, you know, let the money pour in. So it's never going to change.
So what you're also saying, underscoring this, is that the media is probably going to have limited coverage of this situation in a negative light.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're not going to see Fox News saying, hey, by the way, we need to really start a campaign finance reform because they're getting too much money to run commercials.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. It's just that it's kind of a reverse catch 22 for all practical purposes. And so it's something that it's just people talking about it are naive to think that it's going to change. It can't.
But it did just change. It changed last year when they allowed for the
more money.
Amount. Yeah, more money to come.
Yeah, no, it'll change that way. Yeah, more money. But it's not going to, you know, nothing's going to turn that around.
Right.
It's not going to change toward.
Course, right?
No, because
right.
The media needs the money.
Right.
It's keeping them alive.
Amazing. It's amazing. I mean, it just seems so anti what – I mean, it's so anti what people are looking for, it seems, to have more of a balance and, you know, the masses, the Occupy Wall Street. It's just 180 degrees the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and clearly, and there's no question about this, that the wealthy will not only influence but, you know, will make the election.
Mm. We'll see.
We'll see.
I'm not convinced of that.
Well, you think you can have a grassroots deal on this?
I think you can. Everybody can get some money. I mean, like you said, Shelley Adelson gave Gingrich $5 million. You can give him $100 million. He's not going to win. It's just a waste of money.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that Romney keeps coming under attack no matter what he does.
It's like they're just testing him. They don't like him.
No kidding. No, the Republicans are now turning on him.
Well, they've been turning on him since day one. They never wanted him.
Right.
But he's got a machine working, and he's gonna be hard to beat.
Yep, I agree. Just getting back to some payday and some of the wealthy here, and maybe you know this, but first of all, Tim Cook over at Apple, the chief executive, has been awarded a pay package worth about $375 million.
Yeah, bad sign.
In 2011. And it's going to be payable over time, et cetera, over the next number of years. But did Steve Jobs ever get that kind of pay package? He had stock and all that.
He worked the stock angle more than anything with stock options. Him and a few of these other guys don't like the idea of having big salaries because they get it's a tax problem. But you can have a bunch of options. You can do it the other way with long-term capital gains. It's the way to go. Keep more of your money.
Well, he's got some of that too. I mean, obviously the shares and all that are coming into play for Tim Cook, and I'm sure.
But it's not the same when Steve came in. It was like $5 a share.
Right.
Now it's 400 plus. You can get some stock options, but you're not going to get the kind of. It's not going to go up. 1,000% or 10,000%. If it triples, it would be a miracle.
Actually, Apple hit an all-time high yesterday, intraday. Apple hit very close to that all-time high intraday again today, and both times it knocked up against it and came down. In fact, yesterday it came down pretty sharply off of that. And then today it tried to nuzzle up against it again. This is after Goldman Sachs pushed their price target to, I believe, $550 on it over the weekend. This is interesting that we're seeing this now and that Apple is just having a real hard time getting past that. I mean, it's been obviously a good play. There's been a lot of concern about some of the recent lawsuits that are being filed. Lawsuits are just craziness with, stopping this company because their tablet looks
going to get
same.
Worse. Now that Google picked up these patents from IBM, which are mostly have to do with the battle with Apple and the battle with Microsoft. So, I mean, this is going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be amazing. By the way, mentioning Goldman Sachs, I should turn you on to the Twitter feed. I think it's GS, standing for Goldman Sachs, GS Elevator Gossip. Is posting what he claims you're supposed to. If you hear gossip in a Goldman Sachs building in the elevator, you send it to him, and then he posts it on Twitter. And it's hilarious. It's probably the funniest feed on Twitter, period. So,
all right, say it again. Sorry, Biking Rabbit.
It's GS Elevator Gossip.
Oh, boy. I mean, this is probably like the fake Steve Jobs blog.
I'm telling you, if you read it, I was on this thing a couple of nights ago, and I stayed up till like 2 in the morning. I kept going down, digging to China. And this cannot be done by one person. It is way over the top. It's just way too crazy. I would say half of this stuff is probably real gossip.
Wow. That's a Twitter feed. That's cool. That would be fun to look at.
Oh, it's hilarious. You won't stop laughing.
Really? I'm going to check it out afterwards.
It's just one of the funniest things ever.
Boy. So in Europe, obviously, we know that really nothing's been solved, but everybody's all happy because there's been no blow-ups of late. We've seen actually some of the risk metrics get better. This number that I always share with you, this negative 150, negative 100, that is the euro 3-month swaps. And this is actually it hit about 165, which is kind of like get under the desk and hide zone. And it's now at about negative 92, which is still very elevated. But yet at the same time, it's saying that there is a little bit more breathing room. Banks are willing to lend to each other. But at the same time, it looks like Italy's really coming under a lot of pressure now. Their main bank, the largest bank, UniCredit, saw about a 61% slide in their valuation last week. Last week. That's pretty ugly. And, this is really causing a problem. Their bonds are still elevated over the, closer over the 7% range, which is the warning zone. And in Greece, it looks like they're not going to be able to meet their budget with the amount of money, the $300 trillion or whatever they're asking for these days, in the next payment. They're going to request more money. And they're also looking to increase the haircuts they're giving to bondholders, which was started at 21%. Then it went to 50. 75 was talked about. And then they came back to 50. And now they're looking at nuzzling that up a little bit more and doing some really funky things to give you not only a haircut, but your swap with the bond you're going to take is like a 30-year bond.
Great.
So you could have a bond like expiring in a year, and you're going to have to take a 30 in return. So this is kind of a little nutty. And what's happening is that Greece is continuing their cuts on their budget and on the payments. One of the big things is that there's like no aspirin to be found. The companies are not selling their various drugs to pharmacies. So there's all sorts of problems with getting drugs and all sorts of things. And also, what also happens is they're cutting back on police, cutting back on civil service. And this is what you get from it. You get a Picasso painting being stolen from the Athens National Gallery. And this was stolen on Monday and two other valuable pieces. And it took a total of 7 minutes to steal this deal.
Yeah, it doesn't take long if you know what you're doing.
Yep. And so, unfortunately, this is, I guess, a couple other things that were stolen worth a lot of money. But it's, you know, unfortunately, it's I guess, the sign of the times. When you cut back on all this and you create this kind of environment there, it's, you know, it's pretty pretty ugly.
Hmm.
So, but at the same time, there's a little hope going on because all this money is being flooded in. And clearly from some backdoor bailouts by the Fed, we're supplying all sorts of money over there. And on top of that, you know, they've decided to kind of shut their mouths. You haven't seen that same level of discussion from the various, you know, whether it's Juncker or the Sarkozy or Merkel. You haven't heard anything in like weeks of any substance, which is helping to create a better environment, because those late afternoon items that we've been seeing at the 2 o'clock hour, 2:30 hour that really sunk markets haven't been occurring. Although today at 3:55, there was an announcement about Greece not being able to make their payment. And that was kind of, I thought, very timely.
Hmm.
So that kind of halted any kind of extension of the rally that was going on. The other thing I want to mention to you is that there was a, you know, the Fed issued all these bonds. The Fed is pushing down rates. The Fed is making all sorts of money on their bonds because when they buy them back, it's a higher rate, a lower cost for them, et cetera, and this whole thing that they do. And they actually give tremendous amounts of money to the Treasury. They gave $79 billion to the Treasury last year because they generated all these profits on their extended portfolio of securities. In other words, they have all these this bad debt that they took over from Bear Stearns and all these other places. And by shoving down the rates as hard as they did and pressing down on the mortgages, all these things came up in value.
Ah.
So it's kind of like you get to make your own price.
Yeah.
How great is that?
This is more it's institutionalized corruption.
And you have unlimited firepower to do it, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's different than being a Goldman, a JP, or anybody else out there. You could basically just, you know, whack the bonds as much as you want and bring the price up because of the interest rate differential, and you've got an instant profit. Got to love that.
So why do you think the muni bond funds are all going up so staunchly?
Well, I think that a couple of things. One, the prediction that municipalities are going to be going bankrupt in droves hasn't been occurring. For whatever reason, they've been holding their own. There's been a couple of situations out there that have been problematic, but generally speaking, it hasn't come to fruition, which is the Meredith Whitney prediction of last year.
Yeah.
The second thing is that there really is no place to get a decent rate of return now or into the foreseeable future. So if you can get, I don't know, 2%, 2.5% on a tax-free basis, why not put your money there? People have kind of gotten to the point of being totally disgusted on their money markets and their safe money, and they're looking for alternatives. So they'd rather take a little bit of risk or some risk and put it into something. So that's why muni bonds are going up. And the fact that the Fed just keeps on pressuring the long bond through their Operation Twist is creating enhancement in the valuation of the underlying bonds.
Hmm.
Question is that if, in fact, the economy gets better, if, in fact, all of a sudden interest rates start moving up, that's going to get hurt pretty badly. If. A lot of ifs.
Yeah. Well, it depends on whether you're a bull or a bear.
But that always cycles around, right? We're at pretty much one of the highest points right now, close to the highest points on the valuation of bonds because of the interest rates being as low as they are. So you start chasing around, you know, yield, and this happens all the time, really. Every cycle this happens. People get fed up, they chase yields, and then what happens is the bonds start moving the other direction, and then you're stuck. Because what you'll do is if you sell your bond for a loss, you can invest somewhere else, but then the loss, it conveys to the same yield you would have gotten anyway.
You want to see an interesting chart?
Sure.
Look at Nuveen Select Maturities Muni Fund, NIM.
NIM is a symbol? That's a closed-end fund.
Yeah, it is.
Let's see here. Let's go to the charts. Nuveen Select Maturities Fund. Let's look at one-year basis. Yeah, I mean, it's just... I mean, it drops down because of the dividend on a monthly basis. It's got...
Oh, that's why the cycle's like that. Okay.
Yep. Yep, it drops down. You can see that every time it's got a 3-cent dividend. It actually was a 4-cent dividend for a while. Now it's a 3-cent dividend. And every time it has a dividend, this is what they do. It's just a natural process. It takes down a little bit, but then it keeps going up. Yeah, I mean, it's been up in the last 1 year. It's up 11%. And that's just on price. I think if you add back in a couple of percent for the dividend, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
That's good stuff. But again, that's with yields being where they are, and that's... a real problem. Have you seen Netflix lately, by the way, speaking of ends?
No.
Netflix, somebody put a little firecracker up its tuchus.
So what...
Netflix is at 95.
Wow. So never hit the 50 I was predicting.
Nope, not yet.
Not yet. Well, they go up some more. Let's see how long this lasts.
There's a gigantic short squeeze. There is also, they just opened up their distribution in the UK. And this is a stock that was battered down some ridiculous amount, right? From 304, it was as low as 62.
Yep.
And, you know, this is the turn. You got a new year. And a new year, by the way, is only, you know, one day after the old year. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, hey, this is a great stock to buy.
Yeah, it's a new year.
You know, everything changes on the new year. Everything changes. January 1st to January 10th or so, every year, everybody's like, ah, it's a new year. And all of a sudden, we're going to be, whether it's bullish or bearish, you know, we're going to be, you know, moving in or moving out. And that's kind of what's been going on here. I mean, but we saw, that was a in the last, I don't know, how long is it? Let's see, 1 month? 1 month is up 35%.
No, that your buddy that follows it probably did okay then.
Yeah, I think he finally is in the money on this.
Yeah, or might
is
be that, in the right cycle.
The yep. Huge amount of volume. Today was 20 million shares. The average volume is about 7 million.
Hmm.
So, and it was down today. It was actually finally, there was actually a I think Citigroup cut it down today. It was downgraded. So Netflix, yeah. There's a few other ones. I mean, a few other stocks have really been popping pretty dramatically recently. A lot of short squeezing going on. A lot of money coming in. Volume's a little bit better on the exchanges, which is a sign of institutional support. And then you have, you know, the New Year phenomena. We'll see. I mean, with the after-hours news of Microsoft and kind of a little bit of too much heavy action recently, there'll probably be a little bit of a drop coming in the next, doesn't have to be dramatic, but a drop coming up in the next few days that just settles things out a little bit, and then we'll see what happens from there.
All right, well, let's take a look at our stocks so we have some time left.
Okay. Your Apple went the other way.
Yeah, well,
actually, we're probably going to, you're probably going to be close to being stopped out on that.
Yeah, well,
because you're in the money.
I'm doing okay with the other shorts.
Yep, the other shorts are holding in. You kind of jive is moving around. Zynga is a beautiful short. That thing's a mess. It's a mess. It's a terrible, terrible situation.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really
$5. Five. These are a lot of these stocks. You look back in history. You're looking at stocks that, when you really look at the company, that really should be 50-cent buck kind of stocks, and. I don't care what their business model is. It's just there's no business there. They got a right. business model that's, you know, holding it up.
Well, Zynga has revenue. They have decent revenue.
Yeah, so does LinkedIn. I mean, they got some, but I just don't see it. I mean, that just reminds me of those .com companies.
You don't see the gaming for mobile devices being
it's
something
not like
that's,
they're the only guys in town. That's the problem. Right. I mean, these are businesses that have no lock. It's not like Microsoft and Windows. I mean, there's your, you know, when it was in its heyday, there was a lock. It was a monopoly, yeah. And they could sell as much as they wanted. These guys haven't got any lock on anything.
Well, the other problem is you have
it's a hit business. It's like being in the music industry. You have a couple of hits, or the movie industry. You get a hit, make a lot of money. Next thing you know, you got a couple of flops. Somebody else comes along with better material. Boom, you're done.
Yeah, well, it's the gaming industry is really what you're saying. It's the, you know, it's the Activision and all those guys. You know,
yeah.
They have a good Call of Duty, or they have something, you know.
Yeah, it's a huge hit.
You know, something really good or that comes out and then it's great. And then it just, you know, Guitar Hero is great for a while. And then what, you know, who has a Guitar Hero anymore?
Right, it's gone.
You know, so, but the one thing is that they also have a very big tie-in with Facebook.
Yeah, and Facebook could turn around and screw them.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, Facebook come around and say, you know what, thank you so much, but we're going to charge you more. We're going to
do it ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah, do it ourselves. Right, exactly. So we have, let's see, Monster Beverage. They actually changed their, that was Hansen Natural. They changed their name and their symbol to MNST from HANS. And that's just kind of holding water. Acorn, which is the pharmaceutical company for eyes primarily, is doing well, 5.5%. KLO-10 is just kind of hanging in there since October, up about 11%. Your LinkedIn is doing okay, up 1.5%. Acme Packet, interesting. Even with the downgrade and all that, they kind of popped a little bit. Mm. Oil's up a little bit on the short. We'll see how that plays out over the next couple of days, especially with the inventory number coming out tomorrow. And I'm recommending that we look at a couple of other ideas here. And just as a point of reference, this is not a suggestion recommendation really to buy or sell. It's just a game that we do. Anything that you do is on your own. Please do not use any of our recommendations as a recommendation. Seek financial advice from a professional that you do business with, let's say. And, you know, we are not recommending anything here other than that. Also, clients of Horowitz Company, myself, or John may own any of the stocks that we recommend, and that will be duly noted on the spreadsheet that we have at Google, which you can get to by going to DH Unplugged and clicking on the little link. Okay. So, Wynn Resorts. Wynn Resorts is slowing. Asia and Europe is really affecting the whole, even though revenues were good in Macau, it kind of seems to be peaking out here. Stock is leaning over pretty hard and below some key support, and that's a real problem. It could definitely roll over.
Do you know Macau is bigger than Vegas?
Yes. It's amazing. And Singapore is coming on pretty strong, too. Mm. But I'll tell you something. Vegas is a mess, so then Macau may one day be a bigger mess.
That would be the case.
Right? Teradata is a stock that we've been looking at. I mean, the chart looks miserable, just absolutely miserable. Anything can happen. You can see a short squeeze any second on this thing. But at the same time, you know, all things being equal, you know, it's really just looking like a downward drip from here. And the pattern with Alcoa we're going to go with, shorting Alcoa. So we've got three shorts here. Shorting Alcoa, the pattern is, again, you know, it rises up into earnings. They disappoint, or at least they come out somewhere close, and then it just fades. So we're going to fade the rally that happened over the last couple of weeks with Alcoa. So those are three.
Well, at least they're shorts.
Yeah. Anything from you, sir?
I've been looking at some different things that might be interesting. I kind of like the idea of shorting MicroStrategy.
Yeah, that's an interesting company. I one day I'll tell you the story how I got just totally ham-boned by that company. That was one of my
on the upside or the downside?
Downside. Got just totally destroyed.
You were shorting them?
No, we were long, and one day I walked in the office. I said, it was actually on my birthday. I said, did MicroStrategy split? No. I said, really? Then why? What's happening? It was down like 50%. I'm like, what's? They were booking their revenues at the time in advance for services. So they had 5 years. They had a product plus 5 years of services. They booked it all at once.
Ah.
And the revenues look great. And then when that was all came out and we're like, uh-oh, that's not so good. And the stock was just obliterated.
Huh.
But interesting company. And well, MicroStrategy's
it's a short here for me.
Okay. Are we definitely putting that down?
Yeah,
MSTR?
Put it down. Why not?
MSTR, okay. MSTR, MicroStrategy. What about, you're not going to go near Netflix?
I'll wait. Well, okay. I could do the same double, you know, the strategy before is just throw in so you have to watch it, and then when you get killed, then you see the final top. I think it's, no, I'm just, like you said, okay. It's a dangerous stock.
Right, okay.
I got lucky then, once. I'm not going to go back to the well.
And no longs. You don't want the long side.
No.
Oh, just asking. What about Microsoft? You got the M's here.
Yeah, what about it?
I don't know. Just looks like it could be...
It looks like a good short, doesn't it?
A little extended. I'm just throwing out some short ideas. A little extended. They're saying, hey, things aren't so good. There's a lot of anticipation.
Yeah, I don't like when Microsoft says that, because when they start talking bad about themselves, they usually have an ace up their sleeve. I'm not trusting them.
Evil empire.
If it goes above 30, I'll start thinking about it.
Okay. All right. Well, so MicroStrategy, and this is a company, by the way, that does what we say predictive. Well, they do a lot of work in the web and predictive
voodoo
shopping.
Voodoo is what they do.
Okay, I got you. All right. So, and then we got the bank earnings coming out this week too. JP Morgan. We got banks happening. We'll have a lot of things to talk about over the next few weeks, by the way, with earnings.
Good.
And actually, just a side note, if anybody's interested, this week on the Disciplined Investor podcast, we have a financial shrink, I guess is the best way to describe it. Someone who talks about the emotional side of investing. And
oh, that would be very entertaining because that's most of it.
Yep. So we're going to have that. And actually, we're going to have somebody also talking about the new rules when it comes to banking and the what they're calling the systematically important financial institutions and the companies that will be on that list and further regulated by this, which is going to cost about $7 billion to these companies at least over the next 10 years.
Hmm. All right. Well, that should be entertaining. People should tune into that.
And I will see you or talk to you next week.
Okay, next Tuesday. Talk to you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.